it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go. It is our number two of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan, and it is time now for David Hellman of The Athletic to join us for a Cowboys NFL Week 5 conversation. And a good afternoon, David. How the heck are you?
I am wonderful, fellas. Thanks for having me on, as always.
Man, it's great to hear your voice. Let's start with Kevontae Turpin, sprained ankle. Sprained foot?
Yeah.
Okay, how much of a concern is that going into the Jets game if he can't make it too?
I mean, it's never great considering what they're already dealing with CeeDee Lamb not being available. But I don't know, man. After the after what we saw against the Packers, I'm tempted to say just let four go out there with whoever and wing the ball around. And this Jets defense is a little bit of a mess. So if he can do that against Green Bay, I'll be shocked if they can't have some success against the Jets, no matter who's available.
First 3 weeks, I thought, man, this might be the best version of Dak ever. And then to lose the lineman, to lose CeeDee and go up against Green Bay and do what he did, I was like, yep, now I'm sure. What do you think?
I've said it a couple times since Sunday. I mean, it feels a little hollow since you didn't get a win. And, you know, I think everybody's kind of confused about how to react to a tie, but I think that's probably the best I've ever seen Dak Prescott play. And yeah, I mean, this entire season, really, he's been playing out of his mind. He was phenomenal against Philly. He was phenomenal against the Giants. You know, I think I said this the other night, it's been a deserved criticism at times during Dak's career where, you know, he's not elevating the offense and the roster in the way that a quarterback with his price tag is supposed to. Well, he's freaking doing it right now, man. He's playing like one of those guys, and it's been a lot of fun to watch.
If you could make a move at the deadline, do you think that it's worth the Cowboys moving some of that draft capital they got in the Micah Parsons trade if Dak Prescott's going to be playing this well? Maybe upgrade the defense?
Man, that's tough because, like, my initial reaction is I don't think this team is good enough on paper to justify that sort of move. Like, especially you're talking about the assets you got in the Micah trade. Like, we're parting ways with a one for who, for what? I mean, are we going to get Trey Hendrickson, who will need a new contract when the season's over, and you're pushing your chips in on this team being good enough to go to the Super Bowl, and that's what's making a trade like that worthwhile? I don't think I buy that. But, you know, give me two or three more weeks. I mean, if the offense continues to look this good and CeeDee Lamb comes back and, you know, it's, I mean, if this is the best offense in football as we get closer to the trade deadline, maybe I'm a little more willing to have that conversation. But right now, that feels way too premature for me. Like, this team doesn't feel one player away from winning a championship.
David Hellman with you here on The Fan. What do you think about this running game, though, and maybe what the biggest factor is in it coming together like it has?
We're going to talk about this on the Athletic Football Show this week. Yeah. Shameless plug. And I don't mean to take credit away from Javonte Williams. He's been freaking awesome. But, man, Clayton Adams, we were excited when he got hired. We talked about the fun stuff the Cardinals did in the run game during his time there and what that might mean for the Cowboys. And look, like I said, Javonte is running well, but with the injuries that they're dealing with up front, I mean, I've never covered a Cowboys team where the offensive line could be compromised and you don't have a Pro Bowl caliber, like prime Zeke Elliott type of running back. Like, you don't have any of that stuff, and they're still running the snot out of the football. And yeah, I think Clayton Adams is, if I had to point to something that's like the reason why this is happening, other than the quarterback just playing out of his mind and getting them into good looks and making defenses honor the pass, that seems like a hell of a hire by Brian Schottenheimer, and our excitement when it happened feels totally justified right now.
Hey, Dave, when you know you mentioned the wide receivers and you know run out whoever, you know, are we to the point though that maybe that this receiving core is actually getting better and they're kind of figuring out within the scheme? You know, I mean, we've seen Turpin, he's now more than a gadget guy and stuff like that, but is this group kind of like figuring some things out and the offense is getting better because of it?
I think that's totally fair, Brian. I mean, I'll raise my hand. Like for the first, up until like this year, really, I rolled my eyes at a lot of the talk about getting Turpin more involved. Like I thought he was a really fast gadget guy who like he had value because of his speed and what that made defenses account for. But I didn't view him as a real deal wide receiver. And I think he's really, you know, he's taken steps in that part of his game and really become like a three-dimensional receiver that you can count on to do a lot of different things. That's been really cool to see. It's always fun. And it goes back to last year too, but when Jalen Tolbert has a moment, it's always fun because he's caught a lot of hell because of how highly he was drafted and how much people liked him as a draft prospect, and certainly hasn't always been as good as he would prefer, but he has grown into a useful NFL receiver. Maybe not as good as we hoped coming out of South Alabama, but he's taken some serious strides over the last season and a half or so. So yeah, I think obviously CD and Pickens are going to be the headliners for good reason, but I think the depth behind them is a lot better than maybe it got credit for. I mean, our guy Ryan Flournoy had some moments against the Packers the other night. Yeah, I think it's a lot better than I think the average person would have given it credit for even a month ago.
Dave, you know, Jerry's going to, you know, be selling to us. Help is on the way with this defense. And they do. I mean, today they got Kalen Carson, who's now going to start practicing. Hopefully the rookie Rebel will start getting going. Overshown. Where's your confidence that this defense can start to play a little bit better than worst in the NFL?
I mean, that's Jerry's job, is to sell people. I kind of hate when he does stuff like that, especially in the case of like Siobhan Revelle, where this guy is a rookie who didn't have much of a final college season. You know, he tore his ACL in September or October last year. And like to be hyping him up as a guy who's going to come in and be a difference maker. And maybe he will. I'm not saying that he can't, but I don't like putting those expectations on him before he's even fully practicing in the NFL, like a guy who didn't have a training camp, who's never played at this level. I'm happy. I'd love for him to go out and prove that he is that type of guy. And what a cool story that would be. But I'm always of the mind of like, that is a good development. Like we're happy to be pleasantly surprised by stuff like that, but expecting it, I think that's how you get fans to resent a guy when he's not quite ready to be as good as Jerry Jones is selling him as. And yeah, I kind of have the same mindset with a lot of those guys. Obviously, DeMarvian Overshown's a hell of a fun player, but I want him to be fully healthy when he comes back. I don't want him trying to beat any timelines. And obviously, as serious as that injury was, it would be totally fine if it took him a little while to get back up to speed. And like I said, if that's not the case, if he's just the man again the moment he's healthy, then that is a very fun development. But putting those hopes and dreams on guys, I think it's dirty business a little bit, to be blunt. That's not how I would prefer to operate. So hopefully that is the case, but I'm not sitting here counting on it, because I just think that can lead to some bad places when it doesn't work out as well as it's being sold.
Hey, David, you and Dane doing a podcast weekly, you know, about the college football and the players and stuff like that, the draft. So far, I mean, have you had a chance to kind of, I know it's a long way to go, but have you had a chance to kind of dive in to have an idea of really, like, is the first round looking like a pretty solid, the fact that Dallas is going to have two picks in that round?
I'm not trying to bum anybody out. And like, there are a ton of good players. There are always going to be good players, but like the theme for the early going of the college season right now is basically who's going to step up and prove that they're actually worth the hype that they're getting.
Sure.
You know, like I think it's a lot of the big names coming into the season have, even if they haven't been bad, they've just kind of failed to impress and really like put their stamp on the season. But there are definitely some exciting players. I mean, Ohio State is just loaded with really, like, I mean, if you're a Cowboy fan and you're trying to bolster this defense, I would watch a lot of Ohio State and try to watch as much Buckeye football as possible. You know, their offense isn't very fun to watch, Brian, but LSU's defense is loaded with NFL guys.
Sure.
There will be good players, but like this feels like another year where, yeah, like if you're looking for like that star-studded draft like in 2021 with Micah Parsons and Ja'Marr Chase and all of those guys, this doesn't feel like that type of draft. But we're only just now reaching the half point of the college season and conference play is just now getting underway, so that could change. But I'd say in the early going, it's kind of been a little underwhelming. Like, okay, well, who wants to step up and be the best player in this draft class? Because it hasn't happened yet.
Dave Hellman, the Athletic Football Show, with us here on The Fan. Dave, how do you stack up the NFC right now? With the Packers kind of stumbling a little bit, the Eagles winning but not looking great. Doesn't seem like anybody's really taken a stranglehold over the NFC right now.
That's a really good point. Obviously, I think the Packers, everybody was penciling the Packers into the Super Bowl up until the last week and a half. I'm not writing off Green Bay just because of this. You know, maybe they got a little bit out over their skis, but I still think they're a really good football team. It's funny, we can wring our hands all day about what's going on with Philly, and it needs to look a hell of a lot better, that's for sure. But like, they're still 4-0. They are so talented that they can overcome the fact that their coaching and their scheme isn't as good as it has been at other times. So it's hard to go away from them. I mean, if I'm looking for somebody under the radar, first of all, I think Detroit got their butts kicked in week one, and I think it turned a lot of people off, but man, they look like they're right back on track. They look very, very good. And if we're looking under the radar, I really think Tampa is a really good team. And, you know, they lost to Philly. They made a few too many mistakes in that game, but they were right there with them. Their defense looks better than it has in the last couple years, I think. They got a lot of young guys playing really well on the defensive side of the ball. And their offensive line's been a mess for the entire first month of the year. You know, they've had a lot of guys on IR. They've been down 2 and 3 starters. They had their center playing left tackle for the first 3 weeks of the season. And they're 3-1, and they went toe-to-toe with Philly. So I think, you know, as far as teams that people don't view as a contender, I'm pretty high on Tampa Bay. Detroit, Tampa, Green Bay, Philly, those are the ones that really come to mind for me. And the Rams as well. I mean, as long as that quarterback's healthy, they're freaking awesome.
We're all pretty high on Clayton Adams. You've talked about him here so far today. And I'm just wondering what the national hype level is on him. Do you think Clayton Adams could do such a good job with the Cowboys he could become a hothead coaching name already?
Absolutely. I mean, look, the Athletic Football Show, we cover the entire league. We talk about every single team as often as need be. And, you know, the Cowboys are 1-2-1. They're not exactly, you know, they're not lighting the league on fire, at least from a team-wide perspective. But we're going to do a segment on Clayton Adams this week on our preview show. I think he was, like, when you see what Arizona was doing with him and the fun stuff they were doing in the run game and the success they were having on offense without a ton of talent. And Arizona's offense is really, really struggling right now. Maybe that's not all because he left, but it's hard not to note that as soon as he left town, their offense has taken a pretty big step back. And when you're having these kind of results in a market as big as Dallas, people take notice. I mean, absolutely. Like if Dak Prescott keeps playing this way, and if the Cowboys maintain as the best running offense in the NFL, which they are right now, like they're the most efficient rushing game in the league, which absolutely nobody saw coming. It's absolutely the type of thing that'll get you head coaching buzz. I mean, and You know, I think back in the day, you used to have to do this stuff for 3 to 5 years before people would give you a shot. But ever since Sean McVay, that's really not the case anymore. I mean, Liam Cohen got the Jacksonville job off of 1 year as a play caller. Dave Canales got the Carolina job off of 1 year as a play caller. So, and I know Schottenheimer's calling the plays in Dallas, but like with the size of that market and the visibility of the Cowboys, it wouldn't shock me. I mean, maybe it takes 2 or 3 years for it to pop for him, but I absolutely think he's going to, you know, get some buzz if this keeps going through the rest of the season.
And Dave, I'd be pretty confident Shoddy would go find another good one.
I mean, I was just thinking this because I'm prepping for our show and I'm taking notes and looking at things, and it was such an inspired hire. And honestly, it's like not the type of thing that the Cowboys often do. Like, I think the Cowboys have so many times looked for expertise and you know, just like this wealth of knowledge. And so a lot of the guys you see roll through Dallas have been doing it for a long time, and they're these like well-established names. And for Shoddy to go identify a dude who had a lot of, and like, you know, also it's not even like the Cardinals have had all this playoff success, right? Like, they've been a rebuilding team for the last 2 years. So to like be paying close enough attention to see what Clayton Adams was doing in Phoenix and being willing to go get him and bring him to Dallas, like, I think it's a departure from what the Cowboys typically do. And hopefully it inspires them to keep that up. Because if that was his first hire, it at least gives me a lot of confidence that he could make another good one if he needs to, if Clayton Adams leaves at some point.
I wanted to pick your brain on the quarterbacks in the SEC, Dave. Nuts, I thought, number one overall pick potentially. What the hell's going on with him? Arch, obviously, super hyped. Finally had a good game. Lenora Sellers, DJ Lagway. This conference was loaded preseason, but to your point, been a little underwhelming.
I mean, it's college football as a whole, really. Like, a lot of guys that were supposed to have good years just aren't doing it. I mean, with Arch Manning, his name, not to say that he's not good, but like when your name is Manning, the hype was always going to outpace what he's actually done. And I'm not closing the book on him, but I think it's completely reasonable if he wasn't ready for the amount of scrutiny that he was receiving from the word go. Nuss just isn't healthy, and Brian Kelly downplayed it today. You know, he said it's misinformation that Nuss might need surgery, but just go watch LSU's games. Like, he doesn't look right. He doesn't look like the same player. He's got no zip on his throws. He's got no ability to push the ball downfield. So, I mean, he's been very underwhelming. I'm not trying to make excuses for him, but he's just he needs to get healthy. Hopefully he can do that during LSU's bye week. Sellers, I think, has been very entertaining. I think a little bit inconsistent, which you would probably expect from a guy who's still just a sophomore. But I will say, we talked about this on our draft show, Dane Brugler and I, today, if you want to go check it out. I don't think Ty Simpson was getting a whole heck of a lot of buzz coming into the season, which is kind of funny because he's an Alabama quarterback. But, man, I think his game against Georgia the other night was the best game that an SEC quarterback has played so far this year. And he's draft eligible. I don't know if he's going to come out. I don't know how the rest of the season's going to go, but I kind of sat up in my seat watching him against Georgia the other day where I was like, ooh, maybe we should be talking about this guy a little bit more than we are.
You're the man, Dave. Thanks so much for your insights. Enjoy week 5, and we'll be reading and listening there on The Athletic.
Anytime, fellas. I appreciate it.
Cheers. There he goes. A must follow on Cowboys Twitter. That's David Hellman, Brian's old buddy from DallasCowboys.com at the big time.
Yeah.
He's killing it, isn't he?
He's doing a great job.
It's really wonderful. Yeah. And he's a terrific football guest, so thanks so much to Dave for joining us. All righty, we got the C-Note coming up next. Cowboys news of the evening. We'll get you updated on everything in a busy Cowboys afternoon here as they start getting ready for the...
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows if you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile small little compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jets. Yeah, buddy, welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation here on the Fan. Time for the C-Note. Cowboys news of the evening every day about 3:25. And the segment's brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you're injured in a car, truck wreck, call the Frankels for a free consultation, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels are the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. Big day for me. A special treat. The most satisfying kill in yard work. Okay? You might be thinking, what is that, Dawson? Is that a snake with a shovel?
No, you got rid of poison ivy is what you did.
Poison ivy might be one of the most satisfying, and I think I've done a pretty good job with this poison ivy spray in the front flower beds, but I'm talking about the wasp nest here.
Oh.
I'm pulling out. There's one about the size of a football hanging off one of the windows. Oof. On my way back and out of the garage, and I couldn't help but notice it because this thing is alive. Like, there's 50 or 60 wasp eggs sticking out of this thing, and they're flying in there and working on it. There's like, it was almost glowing with how much life was coming out. You know, usually you see it and it's all like covered up and gray, and they're finding this little hole. This thing was wide open, right?
So it was, you took the garden hose to it, didn't you?
No, I have special wasp spray that's got about a 20-yard cone on it, or 20-foot cone.
That used to be a sport, by the way. Spraying with the water hose or throwing something at it and just running as fast as you can with your friends.
Yes, yes, and I've done those before. Yeah. And at times they're terrifying. It can be painful. But this one, as soon as it hits them, they're just dropping. So they don't have a shot.
Death.
Yeah, they're either like super dazed and like poisoned, like, oh my God, what's going on? Or they just drop and die. So I hose this thing down for probably 5 or 6 seconds, and they just all start falling like pebbles one after another. Probably took 200 wasps out, you know?
200?
And then I knocked the thing down with a shovel.
Oh, you're putting up numbers, bro.
Yeah,
wow.
It's huge.
And the ones that survived are like, they're kind of looking at you like, we'll be back.
No, they're dazed and confused.
I don't think so.
They're,
I think they're out of
there.
Because we have a problem back at the pool with them coming in to take the water to go build nests, and they're building all around our back area by our pool. So we put up like permanent wasp trap deals all around back by the pool. They left that, but they'd started building around the side of the house. But oh, dude. Just absolutely eradicated him today. I think that's probably the last I'll see of him for the season. Where are these trade rumors coming from with this Max Crosby? Every time I turn around, somebody's texting me about it or tweeting me about it. And, you know, I dove in a couple of times today. There's nothing to it. I think somebody just mentioned it in, maybe a Dan Graziano type piece, like, hey, this could make sense, that could make sense. And the next thing you know, people are running with that on social media. But if you're thinking about that, if you're wondering why isn't G-Bag talking about this Max Crosby rumor, it's because it's completely made up and fabricated.
Yeah, it's funny because, Eric, you and I, we were all talking about it yesterday, right?
Yeah, I mean, just throwing it out there as a guy that we would want to go get. Simply because he's been awesome on a super crap team.
Right.
So it was just like, that's the position we need, still young enough.
Local guy.
He did get paid, but not at a astronomical Micah or Miles Garrett level. So it's palatable. You'd have him for the rest of this season, plus two more seasons, still young enough, still dominant enough. And again, the Raiders have just been so bad. Like, maybe that's a team that would be willing to offload him. I don't know.
Yeah, he's at $35 million. So it would be... $10 million less than what Micah got. But, and I'd be open-minded to it. If you've seen enough of your team, you're like, holy cow, maybe we made a mistake getting rid of Micah. There's less of a commitment to Max Crosby. Let's go ahead and do this, and maybe it'll make our second and third levels of the defense better. It would be exciting, but there's nothing to it.
Yeah, he's a great pass rusher and a great run defender. Like, he's an all-around player. Like, never leaves the field. He's like an Iron Man that way.
Team captain.
And so, and again, you'd have him under control for a few years. So that would be the kind of guy that I'd be interested in moving on.
Yeah, it's a massive move. I mean, that's a better player than Hendrickson.
Yeah, it's so funny because usually you kind of hear somebody or talk about it and stuff like that. And I reached out to some guys in the Gang of Seven, and they were like, man, I haven't heard that one yet. But I'm like, well, it's kind of buzzing around down here in Dallas.
I don't think the Raiders are really open to getting rid of him. Like, I think they pretty much just brought him back.
Yeah.
So I think that they're probably not like, yeah, that's a fun story, but I don't think the Raiders are, even though they stink, they always kind of do. I just don't think they're a team that's really going to move off of him.
No, they have hopes that they can get it figured out, and Crosby's a part of their future. But, I mean, we do have a month to go, and I'm sure there's going to be a number of players that become available. And maybe if they lose a couple more 2-3 games, it could make sense. But I would figure that's a round one type of player.
Absolutely it is.
And I'm excited about what the Cowboys are going to do, but I think they have contracts internally to go spend that money on already when you start looking at George Pickens and some of the other guys that are good. Okay, Nick Harris, Star Telegram, has a story up today. The Cowboys rookie running back Jaden Blue could debut this weekend if Miles Sanders can't go. He has a tweaked ankle there. And then you add the Kevontae Turpin thing in as well. Would Blue be your best return option?
Yeah, as far as a kick returner now, they might do something different with the punt.
Yeah, but he gives the most speed.
Yeah, he absolutely does. I did ask about Turpin, and I said, hey, is this going to miss some time? And the word I got back was it's kind of unclear right now. So I don't know. I mean, I was thinking maybe a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks, something like that, but the word I got back, it's kind of unclear right now, so I don't know if that's on the good side or the bad side.
Well, Calvin Watkins just reported that Tyler Smith said that he had an MRI on his right leg, and he's hoping that he can play on Sunday.
God.
So that is potentially, if Guyton's not cleared, 4 starting linemen down. I mean, they've been able to do it without 2, but goodness gracious, all of a sudden this offensive line could be very patchwork against the Jets.
I mean, that's a massive story right there.
Yeah, that's a big concern.
I mean, I believe that this offensive coaching staff can give lesser athletes on the offensive line a way of being winning players just by how much they're moving around. You don't necessarily have to be a mauler.
Yeah.
But damn it, you need at least one of those guys to be able to.
Because I don't know what you're going to do. Like, if you don't have Guyton, you play Nate Thomas. But if you don't have Tyler Smith and Guyton, who are you playing at left guard?
Yeah, seriously.
Adeniji? And I don't think he's really a guard. I think he's a tackle. So that's a big concern. You need one of those guys to go, hopefully both. But this Tyler Smith news has me very, very worried.
I've been playing with the idea because of Quinnen Williams and the Jets running game of picking the Jets. And that kind of makes me want to throw up in my mouth. But it's starting to feel that way.
Desperate team.
Can Dak Prescott mitigate that much?
I don't even know if the...
Why bet against him now? But you're taking Turpin and Tyler Smith out potentially?
I mean, that offensive line, they've done an excellent job with Hoffman and Bass. But goodness gracious, that's tough.
Looking at the depth chart, it would be Trevor Keegan,
who they just signed a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, he was claimed right before the season started.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe Trevor Keegan's just going to go ahead and suit up and ball out. That's what we got to hope if that's the case.
Wow, these injuries. You got to get healthy in a hurry. Okay, let's learn more about these Jets. Krusty's Corner's coming up next, Brian.
Yeah, let's give you a reason why the Jets are going to win. We'll do that next.
No, no, no.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you very much, Lucius. It's the G-Back Nation here on The Fan. And the news from last segment, Tyler Smith having his leg looked at. Not sure if he's going to be able to play. The 214 says, play, Colin, get rid of that ball fast. Yeah, I guess if you're getting rid of it as quick and as good as Dak did on Sunday against the Packers, I mean, what's another edge winning 30% of his matchups with his offensive lineman? Here's Brian Broaddus, Krusty's Corner, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement.
Hey, hey, kids! Your old pal Krusty's gonna teach you 5 new words.
You're not wrong about that.
From Dallas, Texas, number 55, Brian Broaddus.
Thank you very much, Lucius, for playing that. Dawson, thank you for the introduction. Good. Thank you to Reliant as well for being a part of this one today. Trying to kind of get some information about the this whole thing with the MRI. We'll see what happens there with that. But that injury report looks pretty significant today.
It's the knee, they say, with Tyler Smith.
Yeah, the knee.
Kevontae Turpin, foot, DNP. Miles Sanders, DNP. So I guess that would head towards Jaden Blue, possibly. Yeah. Lamb. Hooker might be a couple of weeks with his toe.
Yeah, he's got a boot.
Guyton's in the protocol there, DNP, and then, of course, Booker.
Oof.
Pretty you want some limiteds? Kalen Carson, Trayvon Diggs, Jonathan Mingo, Kenneth Murray.
It's a lengthy one, man, 4 weeks into the season.
Holy cow.
That's what a couple of, like, 70-minute games will do for you, right?
That is true.
A couple of, two out of 3 weeks, you played 70 minutes of football.
Mike McCarthy would give you the whole week off after those GPS numbers.
Yeah, man, we're not going to practice at all. Probably not doing. I did have one time a team asked me, they go, do you guys practice down there? Because they're watching our tape.
Like, crazy. A guy from Pittsburgh was the least hardworking guy in the league.
Crazy.
Go figure.
For sure. Hey, by the way, too, if you want to give us a listen on Love of the Star, Eric and I did one this morning. So we kind of got into the Jets offense a little bit. And kind of talked about some things with the Cowboys, what we were hearing and things. I have a chance to talk to you about the Jets offense. And Dawson, you were talking about Fields throwing the football. And I think that to me, there's a team. This is a team, when you look at very similar to like what the Giants, and I say it this way, as far as the skill guys, like this, you know, like, to me, like, Garrett Wilson is a hell of a football player, wide receiver there. But past that, where are the other, where's the other receivers? Where's the other, you know, where is, like, you know, you're seeing, like, Alan Lazar play and Josh Reynolds, it's, you know, Tyler John. It's just kind of a, it's not a group that has a ton of talent at the skill, but the one skill player they have is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And that's your, that right there is going to be something I think you're going to need to be concerned about. I think you're going to be concerned about his ability to play with some condensed formation. They like to move him around. They, you know, if you want to, I don't think Matt is going to play any kind of star coverage or travel with him or anything like that. I just kind of wherever he lines up, but you're going to get a lot of movement out of this guy. You're going to get like those deep crossing routes, and you're going to get the, like, what we call arrow routes, where you run just through the secondary, just as an, at an angle. And this quarterback, if given time, this quarterback can make throws. The problem that they've been running into, and it's kind of a young offensive line. You know, they've went out and they got a couple of veteran guys with John Simpson and then Josh Myers, you know, at left guard and at the center spot. But everything else is kind of a draft pick.
Yeah, that's been made. First tackles the last 2 years in the last, first.
Yeah. And what's interesting also about this team when it comes to throwing the ball is they struggle. The first four games, I looked at the pressures, just broke down all the pressures. And kind of the common thread, Dawson, in this thing was that they do not mesh very well with their backs when it comes to protection.
Oh.
So what happens is you will find teams, and in a game at Tampa, and this is where, you know, Fields was not the quarterback, it was Tyrod Taylor, but they were in that game. They blocked the field goal and went up, just couldn't get off the field in the final.
You know, they could easily be 2-2. This is not an 0-4 team.
Yeah, this is a team that's kind of struggled that way, and, you know, to finish these games. And but the thing with Justin Fields, like I say, give him some time and he'll make a throw. But like I said, you pressure him like you did with Love last week. It's kind of a different quarterback in that way. And I think the game plan for Flus here in this one is he's going to have to show a lot more pressure. And I'm not just talking like four down lineman pressure, because I mentioned when the Jets try to protect, the coordination between the backs and the line is not good, and they'll let some guys run free. And you also rushing this guy, I think the blitz pressure is hard on him. But this is going to sound really crazy, and this might play right into Dallas's hands with the way they rush their passer. How would you describe the way that Dallas rushes their passers, the passers?
Well, I mean, it's really all about the interior pressure.
Well, how would you think? How does it look? How does their rush look? Does their rush look slow?
Yes.
Okay. You might want to slow rush this guy.
They do. And they're very delayed.
Yeah.
Especially when Flus does want to blitz, it's a lot of delays.
Yeah. The thing is, this guy, if you go to him quick and show quick pressure, he'll bail and he'll run.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what you might
want to... He's got some Carson Wentz to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, what you might want to do here is, and it might just come naturally because the Cowboys don't win particularly quick, it might actually play into their hands.
Okay.
That they could actually... Yeah, they could slow rush this guy, and he's going to have to make him have to read and have to stand there. And if you rush him quick, he bails out of the pocket. So this might actually play into Dallas's hands not being a very good pass rush team.
I like this.
That they might, the slow, muddling rush
the
that they have.
The slow rush, baby.
Yeah.
Do you think that's by design? You were talking about, was it Sam Williams two-gapping on the edge? Is Eberflus asking them to commit less? No, it's just... They can't get it done.
I just think that they're really, I mean, we've all sat down and either watched games or watched all 22. And what happens, I just feel like watching Dallas play, they don't win with first step quickness at all. Mm-mm. Now, maybe Houston a little bit.
Yeah, and as
Donovan showed
a little bit.
A little bit.
This past week.
But they just do not gain much. They do not put themselves in position to work around blockers.
James Houston would fix that.
Yeah, that's what James Houston does.
But otherwise, they're fighting.
Yeah, so maybe slow, muddling rush might keep this guy in the pocket. We'll see. But their offensive line, I'd say the two young guys at tackle, they're pretty good. Now, I've noticed this.
Didn't seem like they had good blitzes or good blitzers against Green Bay.
No,
I mean, Murray's really been horrible. Yeah, they really
don't.
Yeah, you really don't.
I think Maris is their best option. And for whatever reason, they don't really want to do that a ton.
He might be in a second. You might be have to have a secondary blitz, too. Maybe this is slot blitz.
Like some Reddy Stewart, Dono going.
Ron safety blitz, yeah. Just anything to kind of, because they struggled with that because the backs and the line were not coordinated. I'll say this about the running game, which I think Breece Hall is a good player. Another one of these good players. Like, he's extremely tough.
And to your point, he's their second leading receiver tied with their rookie tight end.
But how about this, though, Dawson?
Yeah.
They haven't completed a screen pass to a running back yet.
Okay.
Now, think about ways to hurt Dallas, right?
Yeah, the flats, man.
Flats. Flats. Throw to the flats. Put the ball in the flats, you know. Yeah, I worry about the guy running to the flats, this quarterback. I worry about him running around the edge.
Another good one because those linebackers, they are taking such bad angles.
Yeah. But how about this, though, with the way that they're playing right now, too? It's kind of – it's interesting because they're in a situation where they really, really haven't got their tight end involved very much, but they got a really good one. Mason Taylor, I think. Mason Taylor is one of my favorite players in the draft he was last year. But they're talking about getting him like more involved.
They need to.
They absolutely need to.
Because he can be a special player.
He can be a special player. But running this football for the Jets, just watching their plus five and plus 10 runs, explosive plays. By the way, they're averaging 5.2 a carry.
Yeah.
So they might be behind only
the Ravens.
Yeah, they might load up and say, you know what? Dallas is right up there, by the way, too.
Yes.
Teams run the
5.1.
ball. Yeah. What I noticed something about their runs. Majority of them are to the left side. The good ones are running to the left, which would be the defense's right. So now you have to think about this. Are you in a situation where do you put guys like Clowney and Nealon, those guys at right end, to try and mitigate the ability of the Jets to run the football that direction? Do you put your best run defending edges? Because every one of Breece Hall's runs that are really good start towards the middle and then go left. It's like they kind of run behind Fashanu and Simpson. That's kind of where they like to go.
And Fashanu, I mean, out of Penn State, that guy's mauler.
Yeah.
He is a big physical lineman. Would you put Ezeroku in that conversation with how well he's starting to play against
the run? I would think so. Just know that their best ability to run the football.
Left side.
Is their left, your right. So now, does that put. Now, think about your corner play, too. Having Diggs over there. You know, Diggs has shown ability. Sometimes he'll step up, but
Elam's been much better at that.
That's what I'm saying. You're gonna need to have really good edge play, the linebacker play to that side, corner play, and safety play coming down. Because if that ball bounces, their best runs are coming off that left-hand side. So just kind of tie things up a little bit too. When you rush these tackles, rush them inside, because they're athletic enough to handle the outside stuff, but inside they've had problems. All the pressures I saw, the sacks, everything was coming from the inside.
Membu's a pretty good rook.
Yeah.
Membu's been awesome.
Yeah, they've got some, but it's all been inside stuff. Need to keep it.
That sounds troublesome. It really does with Fields.
Yeah. But Fields, if like you say, I would kind of slow rush him a little bit.
Yeah.
Make him stay in the pocket. He'll kind of sack himself.
Yeah, he's just a guy that finds ways to lose games.
Yeah.
He's just been a loser.
The entire Jets team is that way right now, fumbling the ball left and right. And they do some design runs with him, too.
They do some design runs. One interception between the two quarterbacks, but they've had some fumbles. They've had penalties. But they've got a good young offensive line. I think it's not banged up like we've seen the last few weeks. You know, Cowboys are going to have to be on it for this one. And then, like I said, maybe some slow rush, but also think about blitzing this guy a little bit to affect him in the pocket, and hopefully he'll start to sack himself. And be aware of Breece Hall running the ball to your defensive right side. That seems to be where they're the best at it.
Well, thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Krusty's Corner every day, 3:40 here on The Fan. We'll look forward to hearing about Sauce Gardner and Quinnen Williams and that Jets defense tomorrow at 3:40. And then, before too long, we're going to be heading towards game day. Is that a noon kick?
Yep. Noon kick.
Noon kick on Sunday, 9 o'clock pregame.
9 a.m.
Right on. And Tyler Smith with a knee. There's an MRI that's going to help determine his status. We'll check what's next.
All right, let's do the daily football fix. Who could beat this coach in a fight? And let's do an updated trade board. Any of these names pique your interest? That's next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.